The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your petrifying deja vu of a Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. Let's check in with someone we are going to call Negative Chris.
Lads, I'm on my morning walk. The result, I could probably handle. But Gordon, I'm still as furious as I was at the time. I am so frustrated that we have managed to throw away, what feels like throw away, another cup final before it's even begun. Hope thing last time, and now this. I live in Connecticut, in the United States. I was so excited about this final last time. I flew over last time, and I met George. It was a nice time. This time, I was planning on going with my family down to New York, to the Newcastle United bar to watch it. And I already feel as though it's a waste of time. And I'm hoping that you guys can drag me out of this hole that I've landed myself in from just the absolute devastation I'm feeling from having experienced that awful FA Cup game. All the best, Chris.
Good Lord, there you have it. Right now, I think, chaps, we need some positives, don't we? One, to cancel out the negative, and some more, well, just so we can have some more positives, I think. George, let's have a positive from you, my friend.
Well, yeah, I think so. I'd like to say thank you to Negative Chris for that voice note and for reflecting exactly how I felt, I have to say, this morning. But I think hearing that view reflected back to me made me think, desperately need to think of, like, positivity to take forward for all of our sake. So I will start with a positive, and that positive is the beauty, the twatted, brutal, blistering, ballistic beauty of Alexander Isak's penalty. That, my friend, is how you take a penalty. You run up to the ball, you smack it as hard as you can, you threaten to burst the net, you don't give the keeper any chance, and you score a beautiful goal, which in his case was his 22nd goal of the season. He's having an extraordinary season. He is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, can you think of better centre-forwards playing anywhere else?
No, I'm coming up blank with that, definitely.
I mean, we know there are lots of good forwards around, but in terms of centre-forwards, I think he's absolutely up there. With Alexander Isak on the pitch, Newcastle United can win any game of football. Thank you, Alex, for making amends for that awful, stuttery, stupid penalty you took against Forest or beat you scored. But that is just, thank you. I mean, you listened to my words and you acted upon them, and I can only thank you for that.
That was your work, that, George. You did that.
It was, yeah. It was me,
yeah. Chris Woff. Hello, Chris. Let's have a positive from you, sir.
I've been usurped as Negative Chris, which I have to say I'm quite pleased about. My positive is that there's not going to be a bonus podcast this week. Yeah. No, that's not actually my positive, but that is true. So don't worry, we're not going to force any more misery on you, which was my fault, as we well know.
Positive, Chris.
Positive, Chris. Yeah, positive, Chris.
Stay positive, Chris. Get the memo.
Somebody did message us, though, and just say, can we just not bother this week? He did two last week.
My positive is that all of Newcastle's focus is now, I know that they have West Ham in the meantime, but all the focus for Newcastle now does switch towards Wembley. They have a sort of 2-week reset, essentially, between Brighton and Wembley, whereas Liverpool have a heck of a lot more to consider. They have Paris Saint-Germain, home and away, very difficult ties for them in the Champions League, which really means more to Liverpool than the Carabao Cup final. I know they are on elite side. I know they are capable of winning in both competitions. But for Newcastle to have this as their focus now, to be able to have time on the training ground with Eddie Howe, who we know is where he is very much at his best, to be able to focus on that and to look forward to the final. That is what I'm going to base it on. Liverpool play 24 hours after Newcastle next week. Newcastle or West Ham on the Monday. Liverpool play the second leg against PSG at home on the Tuesday. That will be a very emotional occasion for them as much as anything else. The desire to progress in the Champions League, despite having won the Champions League group or second, whatever it is, in that ridiculous table, they've managed to get a ridiculously hard draw. And in that sense, it does service Newcastle relatively well. So that is my positive, that Liverpool have so much to think about before the final, whereas Newcastle now can try and get themselves ready and lift themselves for it.
That's fair enough. My positive is that I feel, and it feels like the pressure's off us a little bit now. I don't know how you felt going into the cup final 2 years ago against Manchester United, but there was a very real sense that we could win that game. And I think there isn't a very real sense that we can win this game anymore. And I know that sounds like it's a negative, but it's not. To me, the pressure is off Newcastle now. They can go and they can play with freedom. They can have a go at Liverpool. I think we always play better when we're not expected to win, when we're the underdogs. I would rather be going into this game as the underdog. I don't think there was ever a point when Liverpool weren't the favourites for this, but they feel like they're such favourites now that Newcastle could. Imagine, just imagine, Chris, just imagine if they pulled out the upset of the century.
Well, exactly. That's that. I suppose part of your answer there is just that enduring hope. You have to hold on to it. You have to have it, man.
You have to.
I do agree with you, Taylor. I mean, I think Newcastle do somehow have to find some momentum between now and then. I mean, you know, or positive momentum somehow. I think it's very difficult to go into a game like that without any kind of positivity around the team and the dressing room. But I do agree with you that sort of realisation that, you know, Newcastle can't just turn up and think that they're going to get a positive result, that it might be their day, you know, who knows, things might just like go for them. Because I think what's happened is a great reminder that, unless absolutely everybody is 100% all the way through that match, the whole occasion, on and off the pitch, then Newcastle are getting nothing from that. And I think that sort of reminder, we don't want that reminder. We prefer them to be going there absolutely in brilliant, blistering form. But I do think you're right that it's that reminder that if you turn up and there's any sort of doubt about, you know, how you perform, you know, your attitude or anything like that, you're just not going to get anything. So Newcastle are going to have to play the game of their lives. But like knowing that in advance is not a bad reminder.
No, definitely not. And also, Joe Linton's back as well. And I'm over the moon with that because I think we've missed him massively. Right then, chaps, let's actually talk about that game of football against Brighton. We're going to have to do it. We're going to have to take off that elastoplast, rip it off and get on with it. The last home game before a cup final, Chris, injuries and a red card. Obviously, that was what was going to happen, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is what Newcastle United seemed, the modern incarnation of them seemed to do heading into cup finals. Obviously, eerie recollections of Nick Pope being dismissed against Liverpool, who were the opponents in the Premier League for Newcastle before the cup final against Manchester United, when he came out of his box and handled it when he sort of misjudged the bounce and Mo Salah was there, and Newcastle had a goalkeeper crisis, and we know that Loris Karius ended up making his debut for Newcastle in goal, his first match in 2 years, and he was actually all right in the game, but it just created that sense of unease going into the final, that uncertainty, having to basically rebuild the side with a goalkeeper who really hadn't been in the structure of the side. And this time, and we will come on to it later on, the exact incident, but Newcastle look set to lose as things stand. They are losing Anthony Gordon for the next three matches, which includes the Carabao Cup final, one of their absolute guaranteed starters, very much a vital cog in their attacking lineup. Lewis Hall missed the game against Brighton, having suffered an injury against Liverpool midweek. He's been for a scan on it, and then he's also receiving, Eddie Howe described it as, waiting to hear back from a specialist on his problem. Now, that to me is a concern, because
doesn't sound great, does it?
Yeah, it almost seems to me as if Newcastle are expecting negative news. If you're waiting to hear back from the specialist, that suggests. But equally, we don't know yet. That might be that actually it is more positive, and that Eddie Howe was, as we know, trying to use injuries as a sort of almost mind games heading into the final. But if Newcastle lose Lewis Hall, what they did against Brighton was to move Tino Livramento to left back, where he performed well last season. I actually thought he did pretty well against Brighton at points. I didn't think he was in first half in particular. I actually thought he looked better there than he has done a right back in recent weeks. But Newcastle are sort of thin on the ground. They lost Lloyd Kelly in January, obviously. Matt Target came on later in the game, but he's seen very little football over the course of the last 2 years. And yeah, just as a match, it wasn't, there was little really to be convinced about Newcastle right now. There's nothing where you look at any area of the team really other than Alexander Isak up front and say that is functioning really well. This is exactly what Newcastle need going into the final. There's question marks over the goalkeeper situation. There's question marks over the centre-back situation. Is Sven Botman going to be fit? He failed a fitness test before this game. Howe keeps saying he's going to be all right for the next game, and then the next game comes around, he isn't there. Fullbacks now, there's doubts over. Midfield, there's still doubts over. And then now in wide positions, there's doubts. So beyond Alexander Isak and hoping that the general tiredness and fatigue, as Eddie Howe described it, is that forced him off against Brighton. Beyond that, he is the one sort of positive and certainty in the starting 11 now going in that final, when a few weeks ago it all looked really set, and you'd say the team that played against Arsenal possibly was going to be the side that started against Liverpool, and now that's very much up in the air.
It just shows how capricious football is and how things can change. Yes. I mean, like we were talking in that, you know, that nine-match winning run where Howe was so reluctant to change that first 11, you know, wanted to protect it as much as possible because they were winning, because they were doing so well. As Chris says, now you've got question marks everywhere. You know, in goal, Martin Dubravka playing, Pope comes back in. He's gone back to Dubravka in for the FA Cup. Is that a decision that now sticks? We'll have to see. And yeah, really questions sort of absolutely everywhere. I mean, some now enforced or some potentially enforced, like Anthony Gordon. Others we're just not sure about. And form is a real problem. Collectively, you're talking about a team that is now conceding goals, conceding too many goals. I think it's, what is it, 11 in four matches, something like that. And individually, you've got players, by the way, including Anthony Gordon, who's not been in great form recently. There's just kind of questions everywhere in a team and squad that just looked so settled a month or so ago.
Yeah, the first half hour, Chris, Newcastle were decent. I thought the midfield looked like they were controlling things well. I have to caveat this by saying I watched the game on my mobile phone in the back of a minibus somewhere on the M62 with probably the worst hangover of my adult life. So what I remember might be slightly fuzzy, but I thought the midfield did okay in that first half hour, and I thought the team looked like they were in control.
Yeah, I thought Newcastle started all right, yeah, relatively well. Joe Linton comes back, adds physicality, gets around the pitch, sporting a non-bleach blonde haircut now, which did look a bit, it looks a bit odd now because I've got used to him with the sort of bleach blonde. So he's not as noticeable in the sense that that isn't running around the pitch, although obviously size-wise and his physical frame he is. And yeah, that's something I think Newcastle lacked against the second half against Forest.
Yes.
He's crucial to the way that Eddie Howe wants to play. I think Newcastle struggled to really enact exactly what Eddie Howe wants to do without a Joe Linton at his physical peak. Now, he isn't there yet, but having had the hour or so that Eddie Howe said was all he was ready to play against Brighton, and then hopefully he'll play a bit longer against West Ham and he'd be close to that readiness for the final. That's what Newcastle needed. And yeah, I thought they started sort of relatively well without really creating loads of chances. Very early on, I thought there was some decent link-up between Gordon and Harvey Barnes. Harvey Barnes was sort of almost seemed to be given a directive to come in from the right wing and cut into the box, and there was a couple of really nice balls. Gordon picked him out. But then I thought after that early sort of surge, maybe 5-10 minutes, Newcastle didn't lose their way a little bit, but just didn't have as much, weren't creating those opportunities really. And actually, the penalty sort of comes out of nowhere to a degree, as it was just Livramento wins. I mentioned earlier, I thought he did all right on that left-hand side, and he receives the ball. And Yankuba Minter, who I nearly was just about to say has returned to St. James's Park, but for the first time on a St. James's Park pitch, actually in action, came in and made a very clumsy, I think the cliche is, a striker's challenge or a forward's challenge on Tino Livramento and gave Newcastle the penalty. And I felt they needed that as all right as they were in the game. As I say, I don't think they were creating loads of clear-cut chances. And so to have the opportunity to go ahead from the spot, I felt was important.
Can I interject at this point? And I know we're leaping forward in terms of the timeline of this game, but you just talked about Yankuba Minter. So what do we all think about,
I know,
a player
was absolute nonsense
who has never made an appearance
nonsense
for his club.
Just would anybody have held it against him if he'd celebrated?
I was laughing my head off. I mean, on the one hand, so I wasn't laughing my head off because it meant that Brighton had just equalised. So that's a lie. I wasn't laughing my head off, but like internally, I was like, I said to Chris, "What? Like, why is he doing that? He's never played here." I mean, on the one hand, it's like it's a show of respect, and I kind of admire that. Probably everybody in the club should be genuflecting in front of him for getting Newcastle out of a PSR hole. We should all be cheering him when he scored. Maybe, I don't know, but it was like that's one of the weirdest. When you think about it,
it wasn't even subtle, was it?
He did it straight away. Those like praying hands together straight away. He scores the goal, gets that huge deflection off Trippier, but he's like doing that straight away and then does it running all the way back to the halfway line.
If you were that sorry, why didn't you kick it out for a goal kick?
Exactly. But I mean, there was that reminder. I mean, he definitely had a mixed day, but it does ram it home that Newcastle have lost a good player there.
Yeah, I mean, that inevitable goal, isn't it, Chris, comes in typical fashion. The ball kind of bobbles through and he finds his way into the box and people are just too late getting across and the ball's in the net.
I actually thought it was eminently preventable and it was frustrating in many ways. And first of all, the Tyrique Lamptey advances about 5 yards at least up the touchline to take his throw. And now that's not the reason that they then score. But then if the throw goes down the line, it's towards Minda, who's in between three Newcastle players, and one flick inside to João Pedro basically takes out three of those Newcastle players. Pedro then advances, and Fabian Schär is caught in no man's land, really. The ball's played in behind, and Minda continues his run. Anthony Gordon stops running, by the way, if you watch the replay back. Gordon, he has lost him by about a yard already, but he just stops running, and then Minda's through, and Kieran Trippier is desperately trying to get back across to stop the shot. I think Dubravka may well be saving it, but Trippier isn't to know that, and then the ball ricochets beyond Dubravka. And it did feel like it's almost inevitable that a lot of people were saying going into the game. They said it before the game in October that, you know, Minter will play and score, and actually he was left out of that match, I think, for a couple of disciplinary issues back in October. But
we watched the goal back loads of times, and I was actually giving kind of Gordon a bit more credit than he deserves in that moment, because I was sort of saying, oh, he's left him there, and so he's just stopped. If you look at it from different angles, he's closer to the action than he is in some of the others. But the more I think about that, the more inexcusable it is, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if the keeper's going to get a touch and the ball's going to bounce back. And if you keep running until the end, because you can't predict what will happen in the moment. And I just, you know, that he might have had a chance to make a clearance, but he's given up on that by stopping that tracking run. And even if it's just to prove that he's running, you should be doing it. You should be doing that until the last minute. I mean, I'm not trying to sort of do a big pylon on Anthony Gordon, but not yet anyway. But like, you know, I think you have to keep running at that point, even if it looks like a lost cause. I think that's just the first rule, isn't it? That, like, in terms of attitude.
Yeah, you have to. You can't give that up, can you, basically?
Yeah, you can't give anything up.
I'd eat orchid.
You mentioned Martin Dubravka there. How do we feel he played? I thought on the whole he played fairly well, Chris. One magnificent save, obviously, down to his right.
From Gomez, yeah.
Which was a highlight. But on the whole, how did he do?
I thought he was Newcastle's man of the match. I
thought some of his distribution was excellent, mind.
Some people dig him out for the second goal, which obviously is the winner, which I think it's a wonderful finish. Yeah, that isn't the strongest part of his game, where maybe he has to come out, but I think that's harsh. The goal comes from... And I know a lot of people are talking about what he does beforehand, which is a very strange decision to kick the ball down the line in the lead-up to Brighton's second goal. But overall, yes, I agree about his distribution. I thought he came into the side looking like a keeper who feels like he's got a chance of getting back in. We said this on the last podcast, that Howe, to a degree, had made a rod for his own back by bringing Pope back when he did. And I thought it was telling that he still made the decision to bring Dubravka back in. And he was... Yeah, he looked like someone with a point to prove. I thought he was more commanding than Pope's looked in the last couple of weeks, which is usually, I would say, the opposite. I usually think Pope seems to be the more commanding goalkeeper. He was coming for crosses. He was trying and always looking to distribute the ball quickly. He was throwing it out, he was kicking it, and there was actually times where he was basically looking around having to go at the players out in the outfield because there wasn't anyone to actually give the ball to, or they weren't ready to receive that quick distribution, which is clearly something Newcastle have worked on recently. So I thought he was a positive. I think there's a big call to be made there now. Howe seemed to be moving towards Nick Pope and restoring him as the number one, and that he thought that he was going to be back in goal for the final. But if you're going purely on form, I am usually of the opinion that Nick Pope is a goalkeeper I think is more reassuring and is the better goalkeeper. But if I was to pick on purely on form, if it is based on that, Martin Dubravka would start for me at West Ham next weekend, and then he would start in the cup final.
Yeah, again, and this is not good. This is not good for a team, is it? Because you want that. You want that certainty running through the team, but it's such a crucial position. I know this is like a statement of the bleeding obvious, but like everything starts with the goalkeeper in terms of setting the tone of the team, giving that sort of defensive balance, giving that sense of security. And yeah, I mean, swapping in goalkeepers in and out. I mean, I know that sometimes that happens in cup games anyway, but it's just sort of adding to that sense of insecurity around the place. I agree with Chris. I think sort of if you're looking at them, everything being equal, then I think Nick Pope is the better goalkeeper, has more stature. But I think he's looked the opposite to that since coming back in. He's looked fragile. Dubravka looks more agile and looks more mobile than him, and looks, you know, just looks fitter in that sense. Kind of match fit. And so, yeah, I agree with Chris. I think I would be sticking with Dubravka from now on. I think he played very well against Brighton by and large. Does he go to ground too early for the second goal? Possibly. He doesn't make himself big. He's not like a big presence there at the far post. And perhaps that's sort of, but you know, it's a one-on-one chance, and that's difficult. I mean, I certainly don't blame him for what happened on Sunday.
Yeah, it might not have been any different if Nick Pope had been between the sticks. It's still a good finish from Welbeck. Second half, very, very poor from Newcastle in the second half. The passing, Chris, the passing felt like it just went pot completely.
Yeah, I mean, this is not really defence of Newcastle, but more it's a sort of damning them with faint praises to say that Brighton were just equally as bad just about on the ball. I thought both teams in the second half just could not keep possession for any spell of time. It was the cliched basketball game, but not in the sense that it was chances galore. It was just both sides kept on coughing up the ball. There were so many. It was so unstructured, so many mistakes, a genuine lack of quality on both sides. There was a sort of tentative nervousness about both teams, I thought, as if it was almost like the sort of magnitude of the next goal, really. If either side scored it or conceded, then that was their cup hopes really given the draws, as we have seen subsequently, as no Newcastle fan will want reminding of, given how it has opened up in that way. And yeah, this is becoming a recurring theme for Newcastle in second halves, where they're sort of certainly on the ball, when they become a bit fatigued or when the game becomes a bit disjointed, they struggle to find a way to grasp it and to really, their key players are not really getting on the ball, calming things and then sort of being the general, as they were the height of Newcastle's winning run, when I thought that both Tonali and Bruno Guimaraes would get on the ball and then they would make sure that Newcastle controlled matches in and out of possession. There was no control in that second half, not for either team. As I say, that's sort of damning both sides at once. It was just chaos, really, but not in like chance after chance after chance, just chaos in terms of you never knew if whoever passed the ball to somebody else, whether that pass was going to find them, and then whether they were going to find anyone with the next ball, and possession just continued to switch from one side to the other.
It's quite unusual to see Eddie Howe make those kind of three changes so early in the second half, but I think that was an indication of how the game was going. And he, you know, at that point, 56, 57 minutes, he brings on Willock and Bruno and Jacob Murphy. And I think, you know, those players at the moment, you would describe them as first 11 players pretty much. So I think that was an attempt to try and get some control into proceedings, but it just didn't happen. It was so bitty. It was so stop start. It was just a really ugly game of football, and they just could not get any control at all. And it was always going to be one of those fine margin games from that point. I mean, I think Brighton are are a good team. I think you could see that they're a team that have won a lot of games in a row. I don't think they were any better than Newcastle yesterday in particular, but their attacking players have got quick feet and they moved the ball very quickly.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle were ponderous in the way they played forward, and I like the way Brighton were doing that. I did say to Chris pretty early on, I've got a bad feeling about this. But I mean, that wasn't, that wasn't because they were overwhelmingly brilliant, but I think we do have to recognise that that you could tell that Brighton are a decent team and
yeah.
decent vein of form, and they clearly had more belief than Newcastle did. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Geordie Polyglot on Blue Sky has said the pressing yesterday was abysmal, half-hearted and always a man spare as we didn't all press together. What has happened to the organised pressing we used to have? Chris, it's an interesting point. The pressing intensity doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I actually spoke to somebody earlier who knows far more about this sort of thing than I do, who'd made the point that they thought that the change in pressing compared to when Newcastle played Brighton in October was partly by design, because Newcastle almost went man for man with Brighton in the October game, and Brighton picked them off on the break. Obviously, that's where Welbeck scored from, whereas it was almost like Newcastle sat in a sort of mid-block and didn't always engage. But I agree, when they did sort of go, it didn't feel like they were coordinated and together. And I think, again, that comes with confidence. When Newcastle are at their intense best and when everyone has full belief in each other, that they all do go together, and Gordon leads the press. And because Gordon's slightly out of form, I think that is having a negative effect, a knock-on effect on others. So, yes, I think that's partly just comes down to poor form and the pressing becomes... You look at the passing, and that was awful. The pressing wasn't good, and that's just another sort of symptom of that, really.
Yeah, we have to talk about it, George. We have to move on and talk about Anthony Gordon and his moment of madness. A straight red card for a tangle, a push in the back of the head, raised his hands. Three-match ban, he's going to miss the cup final.
Yeah, and so it happens, and in that blur of the moment, everyone's kind of like looking around, trying to discover what that means. It became clear very, very soon that will be a three-match ban. There are so many different bits you can look at. The whole thing is irritating beyond belief and frustrating beyond belief. Almost the worst part of it is that the referee had blown his whistle.
Already stopped. Yeah, exactly.
Catching Alexander Isak offside. And Gordon and Van Heck, the Brighton centre-half, carry on running. They're kind of scuffling over the ball. Van Heck definitely leans into Gordon, and then Gordon just, it's a classic red mist moment. I mean, in some ways it's pointless analysing it. We all have had those moments in our lives where just suddenly, you, like in a finger click, your head's gone.
Usually on this podcast.
Yeah.
Quite often on this podcast. And it's a push to the back of the head. It's also a push to the front of the head.
Two-handed, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's an aggressive movement. You know, you see that in his face as he's doing it. He leans towards Van Heck. You cannot do that. And, you know, a minute before, there'd been a penalty appeal. Gordon claims a penalty. That's not given. And whether there's a bit of that sort of frustration lingering, I don't know. But there's no excuse for it. It's inexcusable. It's a moment of absolute madness. Albeit Newcastle have said that they kind of reserve the right to appeal if they think it's worthy of it. I just don't see what grounds there could be for that. And it's a double whammy. And yeah, I mean, so we started off with negative Chris at the start of the show, but I think I had exactly the same thought that he did. It's like that's that. It's like Newcastle are heading out of one cup, and in the process, they're going to go out of the second cup as well. It's like they've been knocked out of two cups on the same day. Mm. Now, I know that's not true, and you know, we will, you know, the club will marshal its resources and kind of come back. But that's absolutely how it felt, and it felt like exactly as you said, that deja vu 2 years ago. Pope misses out. Now it's Gordon, and Gordon's. I should stop wittering on and let somebody else have a go. But like, you know, Gordon's importance on form is undeniable. He's Newcastle's dribbler, that's what he does, creating chances. He's number one for Newcastle. In terms of goals, he's number two on the list behind Isak. They don't share enough goals around. He's behind Murphy and Isak in terms of assists. It's so self-defeating, and it's it's a real shame. I think there have been questions about Gordon's attitude in recent weeks and the way he's played, but it's a huge blow, and it's absolutely self-inflicted.
It feels, Chris, doesn't it, like Newcastle are the architects of their own downfall yet again?
The fact it almost felt like a sort of self-destruct, that's what was very, very frustrating. And it's not just the ramifications, as George says, of the match, although that was huge, given, I just think, the psychology of if Newcastle had got into the FA Cup quarter-final the way the draw is there, it almost gives you a backstop beyond Wembley, whereas now all of the eggs do go in the Carabao Cup final basket. And that has to be the focus, because Newcastle don't have another opportunity in any of the cups this season. But even within the match, it always felt difficult for Newcastle to recover from that. Even when Lamptey was sent off in injury time. Now, I know Fabian Schär subsequently has a seemingly winner ruled out. But beyond that moment, it didn't really feel like Newcastle fully recovered, because psychologically, I think that they knew how the lingering after effect of what was coming from Anthony Gordon and the sort of magnitude of that dawned on everyone, really. And when Gordon's reaction was almost like one of incredulity when the referee, when Anthony Taylor walked across and sort of brandished the red card, he'd already been shoved by a couple of Brighton players. He was like turned around laughing at Van Heck. And did Van Heck go down easily? Yes. Did he make a lot of it? Yes. But he surely knew what he had done. And then as he walked off the pitch, Eddie Howe didn't seem to really acknowledge him, and I thought that was telling at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, Howe said afterwards in his post-match press conference that he hadn't seen the incident again and he wouldn't really be drawn on. I think that was his get-out, really, and I understand that he didn't really want to be drawn on the exact ins and outs of it. But
he has to be asked about that again, though, doesn't he, Chris? Someone will ask him about that again before the West Ham game. And
yeah, but by the time they do, it's 5-6 days on. It's slightly different. It's the real motion of the time, and they will have. I'm sure they will discuss it behind the scenes this week. It was costly, and Gordon, I think, will realise that.
I understand Anthony Gordon's an intense footballer, and he plays on the edge sometimes. And you know, we've seen him in the past where his behaviour's kind of wound up opposition players, wound up opposition fans. I just didn't think there was any need for it, and I think he'll probably look back at that and think, I've been a bit of a silly sausage and I shouldn't have done it, you know. But there you go.
Well, something that we've not mentioned is like Newcastle did have chances as well. There was that, you know, there was the Willock chance, the Willock missed header when the ball comes into him. The big moments just, I mean, this isn't an excuse, but it's like Newcastle didn't take the big moments that came their way. They didn't take them. That was a huge, huge moment.
Hello.
Absolutely. We had slightly the better of it in extra time. I was going to go to Chris, but he appears to be on the phone.
Yes, he's speaking. Yeah. Hi there.
Newcastle did have slightly the better of it in extra time, didn't they, before Danny Welbeck ruined the afternoon yet again, George?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can sort of say that overall. I mean, I think Brighton had more shots, 21 shots to Newcastle's 15. I mean, at that point, it just felt like it's going to take one moment of quality either way. I mean, I felt it was just going to go to penalties at that point, because that just felt like the least pleasant version of what could happen. And of course, then it proved otherwise, that Welbeck gets the winner. I mean, yeah, they had chances, but they were scrambled chances at that point.
They certainly weren't. Overall, Chris, at the end of the day, a very glum St James's Park. I think everybody's feeling the same.
Being out of the cup and now having disrupted their chances and really affected their chances in the other cup, the one they're already in the final of. Yes, it was very, very deflating. Eddie Howe was very deflated after the game. He still seemed very deflated later on. We're going to discuss it a bit later on, but George and I went to the North East Football Writers Association dinner at the Ramside Hall, and he usually... Eddie Howe would have been watching the match back immediately afterwards and pouring over it, but he actually turned up and he didn't try and lie when he was on stage and say anything other. He was just, I'm still trying to process what happened today. It's still raw. It's still painful. Yeah, he has a lot of analysis and I suppose soul searching to do, as most people inside Newcastle do going into the next week or so. But he can't. What he said in his post-match press conference, he sort of ended it by sort of saying he cannot be downbeat. He has to look at it in a positive way. He can't be overly emotional. He can't lose his head. He has to look at it in his usual sort of analytical way. And I think that he'll let the emotion, he'll try and dispense with as much of that emotion as possible and then try and treat this in a positive as he can going forward. Because understandably, the majority of the Newcastle fan base are downcast because it's difficult to be anything but on the evidence of certainly the last two matches, but probably the trajectory of the form really since mid-January.
Yeah.
Taking out the high of the Arsenal home game in the second leg of the Carabao Cup final, the medium-term form is not great, let's be honest.
The reason why this is painful is that this was a great opportunity. Absolutely, yeah. And that's not me making any comment about Brighton, who, as I say, are a very good team and that they're in good form at the moment. But it was a home game. Newcastle have in the past had rotten luck with draws, but much less so this season. And it was a big opportunity in a kind of competition that Liverpool aren't in anymore. And it sort of felt like it was opening up a bit. The pain is that Newcastle will regard it as a missed opportunity because they're competing. You know, they're competing in these tournaments. It was a chance to get into the quarterfinal of both domestic cups for the second time in consecutive seasons. And so, like, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, well, Newcastle wouldn't have been at this stage. I mean, more or less, they did occasionally. But they didn't get to this stage in competitions because they weren't trying. They are trying now. And the disappointment is that you could just feel that this was a really good opportunity. You don't get draws opening up like that. These opportunities aren't guaranteed. And so this does feel like self-sabotage in a very kind of old Newcastle way, and I think that's the disappointment here.
Yes, there's been lots of disappointment online as well. We had a lot of messages, as you can imagine, after the game. Jamie C68 on Blue Sky said Eddie looked like he was at the end of his tether, which I can completely agree with. An email from Alan, for me, the concern is that as I can yet again sense the whole mentality of the club being impacted by being in a final, which is an interesting thought. Darren Bradley as well. This is now the longest period in NUFC history without being in an FA Cup final. I didn't know that. That's mad.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't. Well, it doesn't feel like that to me because I went to the FA Cup finals in 98-99, so I can sort of, you know, they're like in my consciousness. And yeah. But yeah, we've looked back, and it's. It's true that 26 years, yeah. Yeah, that's a blow. I mean, the thing about the mentality of the club, it's very difficult, that Alan says in that email, it's very difficult to argue with that when you look at the, you know, you look at the results. Yes, Newcastle got through against Birmingham in the FA Cup straight after the Arsenal game, but then they've lost badly to Man City. The one win in that period was against Nottingham Forest that Eddie Howe admitted felt like a defeat. And so they haven't kind of like put up a good defence to that. I mean, all I would say is that, you know, the brilliant thing about those two Arsenal games were how cold and clinical and icy Newcastle were on those occasions, yeah. Taking their chances, being ruthless, being relentless, you know, treating that second leg as if, not as if they were 2-0 up, but as if it was 0-0 and going out and winning the game all over again. So that is in their locker, albeit, you know, at a time when they were in slightly better form, slightly, I mean, not in the league necessarily. So it is there. And so maybe just by virtue of then Wembley coming along and the cup final getting along, that they can draw on and what they did on that big occasion. That would be the kind of one bit of hope I've got. But it's difficult to argue with Alan.
Absolutely. There was a response from Bruno Guimaraes as well. Newcastle skipper had this to say: disappointed not to progress in the FA Cup, as it was clearly one of our goals. Moments like this are when we need to stick together the most. I know that when eliminations like this happen, it's hard to accept, and we always look for someone to blame. If you need to find one, you can blame me. We have 2 weeks before one of the most important games for the club in recent years. We must be ready for this great opportunity. My only request is that in this moment we stay united as one and go after the best for the club, because we still have great things ahead. Chris, strong words from Bruno, saying if you want to blame somebody, blame him.
Yeah, I mean, I like the responsibility he's taken. It's exactly what he does on the pitch as well. Sometimes he tries too hard on the pitch to do that, but I think that shows his leadership credentials. I'd be honest, I think that it's very generous to have done that when really it was one act of stupidity from one player. That's, again, not necessarily dig out Anthony Gordon, but that to have a captain who's willing to come out and do that,
yeah.
I think says a heck of a lot. And we can easily say that words aren't what are needed right now. It's actions for Newcastle United fans, but I still think that it's still a very positive gesture for him to have done that and to sort of be trying to shoulder that. He shouldered a heck of a lot over the last few years. And yeah, I know how much it would mean to him to be the captain who could be the first since 1969 to lift a trophy for Newcastle, so fingers crossed that it does turn out that way.
And just very, very briefly, it's like we're kind of being critical of the team, we're being critical of Anthony Gordon. You know, obviously a lot of fans are doing exactly the same thing, but I think one thing that will happen from this is that as we get closer to West Ham, there will be this like coalescing around. The club will circle the wagons. There will be that sense of us against the world.
Yep.
And that's absolutely what, you know, that's absolutely what the dressing room needs to feed on. It's like when they're cornered, when everybody is up against it, that's when you see a proper reaction from people. And that's what we, first of all, need to see at West Ham. I do think it's important that Newcastle, you know, get some positivity from somewhere. But, you know, Bruno taking responsibility like that is what a captain should do. And then it's now up to the rest of the players to do exactly the same thing. And, yeah, circle the wagons, us against the world.
100%. Right then, let's have a quick break, chaps. We'll be back in a moment.
Happy, I'm happy, I'm going to get me suit measured.
So the North East Football Writers Awards bash happened on Sunday night. A few of our chaps were in attendance. We've got to say congratulations to all the winners, but especially to Alicia Boddy, Women's Young Player of the Year, Dan Byrne, North East Football Writer Awards Personality of the Year, also known as the Sir Bobby Award, and Alexander Isak as well, Senior Men's Player of the Year. Alex was unable to attend, but his award was collected by Eddie Howe and coach Simon Weatherstone. Let's hear from Big Dan Byrne, though.
Yeah, honestly, it's an honour, it's a privilege. Watching Sir Bobby Sides is why I sort of fell in love with football, all those Champions League nights, sort of walking to St James's Park and hearing the roar of the crowd. That's all I wanted to do, and sort of he was a real part of that dream for me. So to be given an award that's in association with him and his family, it's a very, very honour.
And I mean, in terms of the reason why you've been awarded it as well, beyond just your football, it's the sort of community work for you. Is that something that you feel you should do?
Yeah, I think so. And not that I've had a lot of football awards, but no, it's nice to be recognised from something away from football. The amount of texts I had of people saying I didn't even realise I had a personality, so that was my thing. But no, listen, it's nice, it's proud. I've got my mum's here, so it must be something she's very proud of, and my wife as well. So just something that I'll be able to look back on.
George, Big Dan Byrne there, a very deserving winner of that award.
Yeah, I was proud to play a small part in that award. I'm a patron of the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, and every year the FWA dinner benefits the foundation, and we have an award which is intended to mark somebody who has obviously a great career in football, as contributors to football, but also contributes off the pitch. And Dan, absolutely really worthy winner for that, not just because of the way that he's embraced playing for his hometown club since he came back post-takeover, a dream that he felt had been lost to him, but also the way that he's embraced that idea of giving something back to the community. He's just been magnificent in that kind of role of leadership, leading by example. He's a patron. He himself is a patron or ambassador for the Newcastle United Foundation. There was that incredible moving moment when he celebrated with a sign language goal. I think that was last season, wasn't it? But yeah, he's given countless hours to look after kids in Newcastle hospitals. And yeah, we're just really, really proud of him and lovely. I mean, as he said himself, you know, he doesn't often win awards. So I think he enjoyed that. And it was just great to be able to see him lift that award.
Definitely. It was a great, albeit low-key, pot on the tine night out as well. Lovely to see Mark Robson, Sir Bobby's son, and friends of the podcast, Mark Gillespie and Amber Keegan-Stobbs on the night as well. And speaking of the latter, it was a great win for the lasses at home to Bristol City. Overcame two Bristolian equalisers to take all 3 points. Amy Andrews with the winner. And a superb way to start a string of games that's going to define their season, potentially, George.
Yeah, so Amber was on our table, so it was good to kind of chat to her about that. She has been injured recently, but came on the pitch at the end to see out that win. Very good, very good moment. Yeah, it's just so topsy-turvy, isn't it? And again, the position in the league just doesn't change. It's so concertinaed. It's so tight there. And yeah, so some big games coming up now.
So no game this weekend, but they will then face Durham, Northeast Women's Player of the Year, Molly Lambert, before three home games on the bounce, beginning with the derby match at St James's Park. Right, Chris Woff, we're going to say goodbye to you now, aren't we?
Yes. If you're going to try and end on a positive note, then you need me to leave before that, so therefore you're bringing in somebody with more of a sunny disposition.
Not only do you not go to games in the South, but you're not even sticking around to talk about games in the South anymore. What's going on? It's ridiculous.
I just don't believe in the South.
You don't believe the South exists as a real thing. Fair enough. Well, we're going to bring Jacob in anyway. He's a lot more clued in on these type of things. Yes, I do not play the man. Right then, if the FA Cup final was a significant distraction for Liverpool, Man City in the league, then good luck keeping it out of your heads on Monday night. Jacob Whitehead's joined us. Hello, Jacob. You all right?
Hello. How's it going? How do you like this for a substitution?
I mean, it's late in the game, isn't it? We're trying to see things out. We're trying to get through till full time.
We'd lost all control with that other idiot on the pitch.
I sort of feel like wouldn't be a control-bringing substitute. I think it'd be more...
a last desperate hope.
More aggression, more beefy. I'd be quite likely to be a sub who'd get a couple of yellow cards late on, I reckon.
Do you think you're the least aggressive person I've ever met? I think you've called yourself all wrong there.
Oh, you've not seen me playing sport.
Really?
Very, okay. Very, very aggy.
Well, so you won't know this, Jacob, but we started the podcast with a clip from with one of our correspondents who was known as Negative Chris, and we thought that would be a low point, but then non-negative Chris managed to transpose himself into really negative Chris.
Oh, wow.
So we
can
need
we call
lift,
you
we need
positive
lifting.
Chris for this,
we need
last,
lifting.
This last few moments.
Maybe we could just call you positive, Chris. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about that West Ham game. It's a distraction, isn't it, ahead of the Carabao Cup final?
A distraction, but like, do you really want to go straight into the Cup final after that defeat? Like,
definitely not.
At least it's a chance to bounce and send the momentum going the other direction.
I agree with that. I just don't think Newcastle can go to Wembley losing games and, you know, expect to then just turn up on the day, in spite of what we said at the start of the show about, you know, about it being a sort of one-off occasion and low expectations. And, you know, I think Newcastle have to try and dredge something positive somewhere in the next couple of weeks to take into it. I just don't think you can click your fingers and expect everything to be okay without a bit of positivity behind you.
Do you think there's an extent as well to which going to London 2 weeks in a row will help, just in the sense of some of the admin will be the same, going down, travel, you sort of get your body used to it to an extent. I mean, it certainly takes Chris a while to prepare for a trip to London, so...
I'm prepared to clutch at any straw that I possibly can at the moment, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give us that. Give us a straw, yeah. Yeah, any straw, 100%. Please, thank you, take that, yeah.
I mean, we say this every single time we play West Ham away. It's an absolutely terrible stadium and an awful place to watch football, especially if you're an away fan. But, George, it's been a fairly happy hunting ground for us in recent times.
Yeah, it has. Newcastle are unbeaten down there since 2018-19. Last season, I think, Jacob, you were there for a 2-2 draw, so maybe you can talk about that in a minute. But the season before that, it was a 5-1 win. I was there for that, and that was back in the... that kind of lovely time when both Callum Wilson and Isak were sort of vying with each other, were pushing each other, and Wilson got a couple that day. So yeah, it is. It's a rotten place to watch football. You're so far away from the pitch, but it's actually been a decent ground for Newcastle in terms of positive results. So I'm sure they'll be trying to do that again. And as I said, they need to.
Gets a thumbs up from me. Half hour walk away from home.
Lovely.
Pretty sweet to get to. But yeah, last season, I mean, if we're looking for more straws, Alexander Isak, 2 really good goals, and he really kind of was the difference in that game. I think Newcastle sort of got a draw out of the game. They didn't really have too much of a business drawing, even though it was a late West Ham equaliser from Kudus. It does feel as if stylistically, West Ham are a team who Newcastle can exploit. For me, I think that... they aren't a team who has this massive pace in behind. I think Newcastle's midfield is a step above West Ham's. And the defence is a bit up and down. I mean, we say all this, made these exact points before earlier in the season when Newcastle were at a real height. I think they had a chance to really entrench himself in the top four, and West Ham were at the lowest under Lopetegui, and they went and got pretty comprehensively beat at St James's Park.
That's right. There's no predicting it, is there, really? William Parker on X said, is the cup final going to be the redemption story of players who've suffered through injury? Callum Wilson, Harvey Barnes, Joe Willock. This is your moment. And in fact, they can redeem themselves twice, George, can't they? Starting at West Ham and then moving on to Wembley.
Yeah, again, we'll take that. There was that feeling, wasn't there, a few weeks ago when Newcastle started on that run of winning matches, that they were playing teams at exactly the right time. You know, like when they were playing Man United, well, pretty much any time this season is the right time to play Man United. But, you know, Spurs and Arsenal, when teams are kind of going through difficult moments, that's when Newcastle were playing them. And it sort of added to this feeling of positivity behind the team. Now it's not kind of working out quite the same way. And West Ham have just won a couple of games. They've beaten Arsenal, which of course was quite funny for other reasons. They've beaten Leicester, which I know is not too much of a stretch at the moment, but they have kind of got their act together a little bit under Graham Potter. So again, it doesn't feel like sort of ideal timing. But the way to look at it from a Newcastle perspective is that whoever's playing in that match, whoever appears, has got like the biggest opportunity, one of the biggest opportunities of their careers in front of them, which is to nail down a starting place at Wembley. And sorry, just been attacked by my cat. It's to nail. Forget it. Can't be bothered.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Did you think Eddie Howe play any games with the team on Monday? Do you think the team he picks will be almost more of a dress rehearsal for the cup final? Or do you think that he'll potentially go a completely different way to give Liverpool less preparation time? For example, on the left, you could either do a direct swap with Harvey Barnes, or you could sort of go back to the Gillington, Joe Willock rotation. And, you know, there's a few different ways he could go.
There's been a lot of sort of talk about this post-Liverpool at Anfield last week, when obviously Alexander Isak didn't start. Now, before that match, Howe said that he's not a poker player, that he can't afford to do that. He has to take each game as it kind of comes. That's the way he's always approached football. But then Isak doesn't start, and then, of course, he does start the FA Cup game. So was that a bit of mind games? Well, I'm not sure that it was. I think if that had been the cup final, if the Anfield game had been the cup final, Isak would have started without a doubt. But that's because, you know, he would have to. But just can't take any risk. I think the problem with West Ham, and then leading on to Liverpool at Wembley, is that he just doesn't have the luxury of being able to do that. What he's actually got to do is find a formula to win a match. I mean, I don't think that you can be much more clever than that at this point, because they don't have any form. I don't know if Taylor agrees with that, but it's like, at the moment, it's not like he can shuffle things around and try and play games and leave a few question marks in the air. The question marks are about the way Newcastle are playing in the first place.
Yeah, the time for brinksmanship's gone, isn't it? Basically, it needs to be, he needs to get the right team, he needs to get the right approach tactically against West Ham. It's probably going to be very different to what he does against Liverpool. So the team might not even be able to be a dress rehearsal for that cup final. He's just going to have to go with whatever's best for each game. I would like to see Joe Linton start again, maybe play on that wide left and rotate with Willock. I like that little combination. Harvey Barnes hasn't looked massively in form since he's came back from injury, but he's another player with a point to prove, so you never know, do you?
But he should be bursting. Very difficult for him. We've talked about that. We talked about it over the last couple of weeks. He's one player that hasn't kicked on under Eddie Howe, I don't think. I mean, we certainly haven't seen that yet. Yes, he's scored goals this season, at the start of this season in particular, but has had a tough time since then. Hasn't looked comfortable on the right-hand side when he's played there. Theoretically, this week, this fortnight, is an incredible chance for him to say, I should be playing. And, you know, yeah, it's terrible for Anthony Gordon. It's the knock-on effect. The team is not good. Here's Harvey Barnes' chance to shine. And if he's got something about him, then he should be busting a gut in training absolutely every single day to show that he's, you know, that he should be in that starting team.
Yeah, don't think we can argue with that. Right then, chaps, let's finish things off. At podonthetyne@theathletic.com if you've got anything you want to say or ask on the show. Thank you very much, Jacob, for joining us. You've managed to get us across the line when, let's be honest, it looked like we weren't going to make it with Chris Woff, but you've injected a bit of energy. We've managed to get through.
Thank you. Just important, you know, come with a bit of positivity, bit of levity. Can't be all doom and gloom. Send you off to your tea with a bit of happiness.
Nice to be involved, isn't it? It's nice to be involved. Thanks a lot, George Corgan.
That's fine, yeah. And talking about tea, I'm just off to chew on some drawing pins.
Lovely. Outstanding. Right then, that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody out there. We shall speak to you very soon from everybody upon the Tyne. Have a good week. Take care. Goodbye.
Hi there.
Hello, you've got appointments tonight?
Yes.
Can you come in any earlier?
What sort of time?
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.